3P05, welcome back to our third week's worth of content. I just want to start off again with a little bit of housekeeping. I think I'll keep this sort of pattern up as we go along to keep you abreast of things as we move forward. Just a note about your audio responses. I'm really enjoying listening to them. I am listening to each and every one of them. I'm enjoying hearing your voices. I know it's a little unusual, and I know it's really uncomfortable recording yourself. Certainly, I can empathize with that experience. It's a different sort of experience when you have to listen to how you sound and all that kind of good stuff. And I know you can make yourself conscious, but I do appreciate you all putting in the effort. And just as an answer to some of the questions that I've received so far. We are looking for these responses to be about 4 minutes long, which again seems like a lot right now. But if you plan a couple things out, write a few things down, and sort of let yourself get going, you'll find yourself going through that 4 minutes pretty quickly. So keep that in mind. I am looking for 4 minutes. I know a large majority of you are keeping that time limit as a minimum in mind so far. So I really do appreciate that so far as well. And just as another reminder about your form responses, which are also overwhelmingly good right now, I just want to keep reminding you that it's 350 to 500 words, those responses, and it does constitute a fairly large component of your grades, the two of those two components together. So keep on them. To be honest, again, the one of the easiest ways to do this is to, when you're listening to this audio lecture and you're seeing the slides and all of those things that we're going through, make notes as you're listening. Again, if you're listening to this on the bus or at the gym or anything like that and you've got access to your phone, open up a notes app, do whatever you need to do. Have a laptop out if you're at home or whatever it is the way that you listen to this audio lecture, but make sure you are referencing things directly. The reason being, we want to make sure that we're keeping you following along here, especially as we are beginning to work on your crisis responses. The first crisis response outline has been posted on Brightspace. You can have a look at that at any time. Also, make sure you have listened to the audio lecture of the crisis response outline, which has also been posted on Brightspace as well. I'm looking forward to seeing how you get to work on this assignment. Certainly, it's early on in the semester, so there isn't a lot of content that we've given you so far. This is sort of a way of getting your hands dirty in the sort of nitty-gritty work of creating a nonprofit, but also just so important just to get you to sort of walk through what goes into the creation of one, especially what goes into the creation of one of these boards. We're going to be studying boards throughout the semester, but I really wanted you to have a sense right off the bat of how nonprofits operate when they're first being formed. Also, just a quick note here about generative AI. Certainly, this one does not lend itself well at all to generative AI, especially because I am looking for real people in terms of the people on the boards here. And I've run this through a number of times on a number of different platforms, and it has a tendency to just to mangle these things. It's really not that labor-intensive an assignment. It really actually, frankly, it's more hassle than it's worth if you're going to try and just turn this through generative AI. And I just, as a general idea, don't do that in general, but certainly not for this assignment, because you'll take something that you could do in a relatively short amount of time and something that you end up getting a very poor grade on. So think twice before you do that on, frankly, any assignment, but certainly for this assignment as well. Certainly, I think in this assignment, asking if you do use generative AI, and I would assume that most of you at this point are using it, asking it questions about the sort of legal definitions of nonprofits. Be careful also if you're going to do that, but just make sure you ask for specific citations with live links if you're going to do that. But certainly that'll help you better understand it. That's the best place I would go for generative AI on this first assignment. But I am looking for real people with real lives and real experiences. And generative AI really isn't great right now at sourcing those things for you, other than extremely high profile people that everyone knows. I ran through one time, recommended that we get Ron McLean to be on our board. And I don't think that there's a really compelling reason to get Ron McLean. But maybe there is. Hey, I mean, good luck backing that up. But that's another example of how that would end up making more work for you than just simply doing the small amount of manual academic labor that is required for this assignment. Discussion of generative AI will continue throughout the semester as it continues to be something that we seek to use more effectively in our university lives. Certainly, I say that myself and you as well. But I'll have more guidance for you as we go on this semester with that. But definitely do get started on your first crisis response. There's going to be four of them throughout the semester. And if you've got the time, knock it out here with a few days to spare so you're not cramming everything into that assignment deadline with hours to spare. So this week's a far more conventional sort of week. We have content here. We're going to have guest lecturers coming throughout the semester, and we're going to have specific content, but we still are in the fundamentals phase here. I understand that this is not necessarily the most page-turning of subjects here at this point, but it's so crucial to sort of get a general understanding of what a nonprofit is and how it operates. But we do have slides for this week, and you can have a look at those on Brightspace as well when you have a chance. If you're listening to this and when you're out and about, make sure you go back and have a look at those. That'll help your form and audio responses, but... looking forward to getting started with this week's content. The title of this week's slideshow is Form and Facility in Nonprofit Sport Organizations, and we sort of are going to be moving through this in that same sort of way, building on what we've worked on last week and establishing a foundation of what is exactly a nonprofit organization. So hopefully by now, we've sort of opened your eyes to the possibilities of what a nonprofit can be and why it is that we're asking you to study it in a course in a program devoted to sport management. I think last week it's very important that we revisit the fact that that nonprofits are such an important part of the delivery of sport, the sporting experience to every single Canadian, and including many of you listening to this, I would venture 95% of you or more having your sport delivered by a nonprofit organization. Now, even the sports that you follow, examples being the NSOs as organized as nonprofits. Hopefully you've had a look at that corporate search website there and you're able to look up some of the sports that you follow and seeing the nonprofits that are organized to deliver that sport to you as well. So again, that's the sort of part that we went on with last week. Now we're going to be talking about what makes a nonprofit effective or what tendencies lead to an effective nonprofit sporting organization. So let's start with a very important point here, something that we're going to be revisiting over and over and over again. It's a term that you maybe have heard and you might be familiar with. You maybe have heard of the word used in sentences or in specific contexts, and that word is altruism. A-L-T-R-U-I-S-M. Sometimes I find myself, I'm not a great enunciator of that word, altruism or altruistic. Altruism refers to the selfless concern for the well-being of others, especially as a principle of action. Okay, and that's from the OED. So the idea here is this is an organizing principle of many nonprofits. Now, again, we've talked about this last week, the difference between charities. We've mentioned that there is a specific exemption in the tax code for nonprofit sporting amateur organizations. And we mentioned that there is a difference between the way that nonprofits are organized and charities, relating especially to this notion of philanthropy or philanthropic endeavors. But as Schoenberg argues, quote, altruistic behaviors are intended to provide help. Altruistic behavior may manifest in the workplace through actions such as providing aid to someone with temporarily experiencing a heavy workload, voluntarily assisting a colleague with a new task, and informally orienting new staff. So that's just an idea of what altruism looks like in the actual workplace itself. Altruistic behavior is essential to the functioning of any nonprofit organization, and it informs every role and structure. And that's not to say that nonprofit organizations are the only organizations that are concerned with altruistic actions or altruistic behaviors, but they are an essential component of them. And again, as you remember last week, we talked about what the organizing principles, this was part of your forum responses, is the organizing principles of a nonprofit and how important it was that they were different from a for-profit entity. And this is really where the rubber meets the road in that same sort of way here. There's this notion of altruism. It is at the root of what we need for a successful nonprofit. It's different than charity. It's different than philanthropy. But there is this notion of altruism. Now, that's not to say, as I've just mentioned before, that sporting organizations on the professional side don't ask their employees to act altruistically. But the difference is, of course, there are other functions of for-profit private enterprises in the sporting realm. For instance, if we just take this out of the sporting context for a second, if you're dealing with in the corporate world, in the tech world, for instance, altruistic behavior might be a desired goal of any one company, but there is other goals and that are much more important, that being the innovation of products, the generation of value for shareholders, that type of thing. But we're dealing with nonprofit sporting organizations, nonprofit organizations in general. This is absolutely paramount and is the bedrock of successful nonprofit organizations. And it seems something a little, perhaps cheesy, a little bit corny, but again, so often you will look at the behavior and the conduct of those people running nonprofit organization and you can boil it down to, are you acting altruistically? Is this in the best interest of this organization and the best interest of the demographic that the organization was created to serve? And that is, again, a question that as we are still in the early stages of learning about what makes nonprofits effective, or in another way, what makes an ineffective nonprofit organization, it is important that we have discussed this notion of altruism in nonprofits. The roles and structures in a nonprofit as well, I think this is important too. And this is, again, bread and butter stuff here, really important to note this. There are essentially three types of individual roles, roles and structures for inside of a nonprofit. The first one we're going to talk about are actions at the individual level. And this is something that I think is pretty easy to gather what that would mean, but that would be the actions of a single individual. So again, how you conduct yourself inside of that organization. The roles themselves, the way that they are organized in this way, the actions of a single individual are important. Again, the conduct of that single individual is representative of the larger whole, but it's important to consider that that's the first sort of step when we're considering what makes an effective nonprofit. How are the individual under scrutiny in any one moment acting, and are they acting in the best interest of the organization? Are they acting altruistically, for instance? And we can move on from there. The second part would be board action, which we often refer to as group action. That's how Schoenberg defines it. This is, again, the way the organization functions at its highest levels of execution. The third would be organizational. And Schoenberg describes this as the shared expectations of an individual board member to act as a representative in the best interests of any organization and its members. So these three types of roles and structures are going to be discussed throughout the semester in terms of when we are looking at nonprofits, maybe the nonprofit that you're working with. We are going to be looking at these types of roles and structures and evaluating how effectively they are carrying out their mission according to various sets of criteria. So moving on from there, we are going to now discuss the behaviors present at each of these three levels. We're going to be talking about proficient, proactive, and adaptive behaviors. This is very important when you're evaluating a nonprofit, which is, again, something that I want you to be able to do by the end of the semester. And again, when you're saying nonprofit, again, imagine an organization that is responsible for delivering sport, one that you're now familiar with thinking of last week. There are three types of behaviors that I want us to be familiar with: proficient, proactive, and adaptive. Let's begin with proficient. Now, proficiency is a word that I think you're also probably familiar with. I think that you come into contact with it, certainly when you are on the job hunt. I mean, perhaps many of us have written proficient at various skills, may they be computer or linguistic, on a resume. Maybe perhaps you have exaggerated several things, but proficient, I've written proficient in Excel long before I believe I truly was proficient in Microsoft Excel, and I suspect from that context you're able to sort of glean what the word proficient means, the sort of notion that you are able to use something effectively and you are able to complete tasks in a given area with all the required information and to be able to achieve measurable outcomes. Proficient behaviors as they relate to the characteristics of a nonprofit and those working for a nonprofit are a little bit different. These describe how individuals use proper procedures and standard practices to meet the tasks and requirements of a position. Proficient behaviors align with the expectations of board members to contribute to the strategic and control functions of the board while also following certain practices in fulfilling their role. So what this means here essentially is we are going to be looking at, especially when we do analysis or your community engagement report of a nonprofit organization, you're going to be looking at how well the members of this organization are able to meet the standards and practices of the organization as set out in either their mission statement, their bylaws, their foundational documents, their constitution, their codes of conduct, whatever you choose to sort of use as the method to evaluate this organization. Basically, this is a very simplistic way of evaluating it here, but proficient behaviors are particularly important when the tasks are predictable and stable within a set of agreed-upon techniques for completion. The larger the organization, the more the proficient behaviors become absolutely essential to the successful operation of that organization. It seems really, you know, basic and simplistic, but again, it's a good place to sort of get ourselves started here. When we're talking about an organization that has a large amount of personnel or delivers support from coast to coast to coast, you need to make sure that the things are done in a certain way, and especially when you're dealing with national sporting organizations, a couple of which you're going to be working with in this semester, or you have the option of working with this semester. Proficient behaviors are a big part of how they carry out their organization's goals with vast geographic distances. And I think in sort of the post-COVID context now, with a lot of these employees being spread even farther across the country, you'll see that proficient behaviors are really, really, really valued, which basically, again, if you want to work for an organization like this, or this is, again, something that is absolutely applicable to the private industry as well, in the private sector, or even to imagine the for-profit sports sector, Can you follow the rules, right? Can you do your job within a set of agreed upon parameters? And there's a time and place for creativity, and there's a time and place for flaunting regulation. But again, when it comes to these sort of basic ways we evaluate whether or not nonprofits are effective, we look to proficient behaviors. For instance, when we are evaluating the conduct of those that were involved in the most recent scandal related to Hockey Canada, this is a big one. In the analysis of trying to understand what had gone on over the past years at Hockey Canada, one of the questions that was raised was, is this a question essentially of what boiled down to, are these proficient behaviors that are breaking down? Or is this a question of policy? Are the rules wrong or are the actors wrong? Now, again, depending on your point of view within it or without that organization, you are going to have a different interpretation of what went on here. But these types of behaviors are evaluated to the each and every member of that organization, including the board level. Okay, so were they following the rules or were the rules incorrect? That's really essentially what some of these questions boil down to when something goes wrong with these organizations. Moving to proactive behaviors, and again, these are behaviors now that are required of or certainly present in high-functioning nonprofit organizations. They're people who know how to follow regulations that have been adapted for very specific best practices. Then there are proactive behaviors. What are those? Well, they are self-initiated and future-oriented. The future-focused nature of proactive behaviors means board members may engage in such behaviors to address the expectation of their contribution to the board's strategic functioning. This is from Firkins and Shilbury from 2012. Proactive behaviors may also assist in the control role by anticipating and preventing issues from developing. So, can you follow the rules? Step one, right? How effective are you at carrying out the mission of your organization by following established best practices? That's step one. Step two, how good are you as a board member? Certainly, and this is, again, something that we're going to be talking about throughout today. This is a way of evaluating the effective behavior of a board member. Are you able to anticipate things that may be coming down the pike? Yes, it is valuable to be able to follow the rules and carry things out from a sort of proficient point of view. But are you able to foresee perhaps where there may be gaps and there may be problems that are coming down the pipe? Because this is a very, very crucial part when you're dealing with nonprofits, and it's something that we're going to be talking about throughout the semester. If you have a day-to-day view of your organization, that's okay for many positions, right? If you're thinking about making sure things are just working smoothly and that the event that you're throwing right now goes off, that's a big part of it. But as an effective board member, what's extremely important to remember is, yes, you must have that day-to-day vision in the front of your mind, but near the front of your mind needs to be this sort of long-term planning that comes with it. You need to be thinking about delivering sport long after you're no longer on this planet in some situations. When you're thinking about being a board member of Basketball Canada, Soccer Canada, are you making deals? Are you creating structures that are going to ensure that your sport, that you're delivering, that you're responsible for, will still be healthy 20, 30, 40 years from now? So a great example here that we're going to be talking about throughout the semester is Canada Soccer and the sort of problems that they have found themselves in most recently. Now, there's a chance you're familiar with the Canada Soccer situation. There's a chance you're not. That's okay. But essentially, one of the problems that Canada Soccer has found themselves in is, while the men's program has found themselves to be more successful in the last, let's say, 24 months than they have been in the preceding 30 or 40 years, in terms of their international and national team's successes, there has been an unprecedented amount of financial turmoil that has befallen the organization. And at the same time, there has been a twin set of scandals that has sort of affected the organization as well. And that is the men's and women's national team both protesting openly in open defiance of the federation, threatening to not play games. In fact, in some senses, actually canceling games, all because of demands to improve treatment and larger shares of prize money. And essentially, again, what went from being an amazing success story in terms of the on-field product has turned into a very ugly situation with many of the athletes and many of the administrators of Canada Soccer. And in fact, the word bankruptcy has been thrown around by the president of Canada Soccer right now. And the actual on-field product, if you're listening to this right now, in the fall of 2023, has been affected quite significantly. I would posit on the women's side. And on the men's side, we've had friendlies being canceled, international windows not being fulfilled. It's a really ugly situation. So how does this happen? How can this possibly be? How can, during this period of absolute unprecedented success, how could it be that this is also bringing along an enormous amount of financial turmoil? And again, there's many different reasons for this, but a couple of them boil down to the behaviors of board members and not adhering to this notion of positive proactive behaviors. So for instance, there was a specific deal that was signed. It was created, an entire business entity was created called Canada Soccer Business. I won't get too into the weeds with this, but essentially what ended up happening was a long-term agreement was signed with this specific organization that essentially signed away the rights for Canada Soccer to receive the full amount of revenue generated from sponsorship money. Instead, it would go to this other entity, and that entity would be responsible for another series of innovations that were, and again, in many ways, also helping the development of the domestic Canadian soccer scene as well. But again, it was a relatively short-sighted deal in retrospect. Certainly, the way that this deal is being looked at now is potentially limiting the amount of revenue generation potential for Canada Soccer to maybe the tune of tens of, maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars. So, yes, this is an important way to keep soccer, essentially viable in the short term. But again, and perhaps that is in many ways where they will look back and say this was a proficient behavior. Yes, it was followed. This was a deal that perhaps it was in the best interest of Canada Soccer in that very moment. But was it essentially a proactive decision? Was this a decision that's going to have the long-term health of Canada Soccer? And if you look at so many of the scandals that, and when I say scandal, I essentially mean labor strife that arose over the past 6 or 7 months, you can trace a lot of it back to this one very important deal that was signed. And it's promotion of Canada Soccer Business. If you're not familiar with this, you can have a look online in terms of the actual terms of this agreement and the revenue that is paid out annually, which is capped at a certain number. And perhaps that deal will get renegotiated. And I hope by the time you're listening to this, it has been. But certainly, this is an example of proactive behaviors of a nonprofit organization sort of failing the organization as a whole. And that's not essentially me editorializing things. This is essentially the way anyone would read the situation as it's developed right now, because of how ugly things have gotten on top of a couple of these other bad sort of business deals that have been made here. But here's the problem when you look at this from the perspective of a nonprofit organization. So if you are delivering it in a private sporting sector, yes, there's the idea that your team could suffer, right? Your team could do poorly. Your team could lose money. Your team, worst case scenario, your team could fold and move, right? And then you lose a job and the city loses a team. And that's horrible. And that's happened many times. Bad financial decisions. And you know, there's even been outright fraud in some situations and that have led to teams moving in various sports. And that's absolutely a really bad thing. That being said, if you work for an NSO or a nonprofit that delivers sport, you are dealing with something that's extraordinarily precious to many people in the country that you work for. And if you bankrupt this organization, or if you do things that leads to the bankruptcy of the organization, it's not just about losing one or two specific franchises or even a couple associations. You're talking about a national organization which jeopardizes sport coast to coast to coast. Now, there are ways of getting around things without national sporting organizations, but what I'm trying to relate to you here is the stakes are high, right? And proactive behaviors in this way are important because, yes, it's important to make sure the lights are on day to day, but if you are running these organizations, if you are trusted as a board member, someone who is trusted with steering the ship, so to speak, you must be sure that you are acting in a proactive manner, lest the wolves arrive at your door and the actual existence and delivery of that sport be jeopardized. Lastly, I want to focus here, lastly on these three behavior types, is the adaptive behaviors. We'll keep using the Canada Soccer example here as we move through this. Board members may use adaptive behaviors to fulfill expectations of responding to the changing environment of the board and addressing ambiguity in their roles. Adaptive behaviors involve individuals responding constructively to unexpected and new circumstances, and these behaviors would help board members address the challenges created by change in this board governance setting. So this is, again, so it's great for me to sit back here. You know, I wasn't in those boardroom meetings and sit back and say, hey, they signed a bad deal and this is, it was a terrible decision and they should be all, publicly shamed for it, blah, blah, blah. That's not really what I'm looking to be doing here. I'm trying to use examples here that are somewhat front of mind for you in the sport industry. You can use the Hockey Canada example in your head as well. We'll probably go back to that throughout this semester as well. But one of the things that we can unequivocally say about this, we can certainly say that these behaviors were not proactive, but we can also say that, look, the time for adaptive behaviors is upon us in terms of the throes of some of these scandals as they relate to the modern sporting landscape, where these board members are going to need to adapt significantly. And maybe in many senses they are attempting to. But essentially says, okay, that the conditions that created certain agreements, perhaps even the agreement that I mentioned earlier about the siphoning of revenue to Canada soccer business, for instance, that maybe have been created for a specific context. But in order to keep this NSO and this nonprofit working effectively and surviving this specific situation, we need the ability to demonstrate adaptive behaviors. And that is essentially a really, 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 really stern test for the leadership of many nonprofits in many different types of sports. Essentially, this means here is how well can you change direction? How well can you adapt to the evolving circumstances? And again, sport is wonderful from this, in this sort of way. I mean, it's wonderful and it's horrible in that same sort of way. I was mentioning this very recently with teaching another course. But, you know, when I was teaching this course, when I first arrived at Brock in 2021, we were talking about an NSO that seemed to have everything going on perfectly from the outside. It would appear as though Canada Soccer was doing fantastic. It would appear as though things are on the absolute up and up for sure, and that this was truly a moment of great success for Canada Soccer. Fast forward 24 months, and things are in a very, very, very different place. But this is the way that sport works, and anyone here who understands sport, and I would venture all of you are related to sport in your own way, but you all do have some relationship to sport if you're in third year in a sport management program here at Brock, you understand that sport and change are essentially intertwined, right? That you had a great year last year. What have you done for me lately? This is a situation that's very true in sport. That's also true in the private sector. I understand as well. Their quarterly earnings call every quarter, and you need to be able to demonstrate growth every quarter, or you're going to be looking for new work. And the same sort of way, when we're evaluating board members of a nonprofit, or what makes an effective nonprofit in general, we do look for these adaptive behaviors. How well were they able to adapt? And in the past 2 or 3 years, we have seen many NSOs behave extremely, extremely well in the face of enormous amounts of change. COVID really changed the way that most NSOs had to deliver their support to organizations, had to distribute revenue, had to create programming. We saw nonprofits disappear. We saw some sports have to change ownership, all that kind of good stuff. But again, imagine circumstances change. That's something you can always count on. How well can you address these challenges in the sport governance settings that you look at? And this is something that I think you are definitely going to be doing when you're looking at the nonprofits that you're working for. In many ways, most of them that are working with us are demonstrating adaptive behaviors and proactive behaviors by allowing us essentially to partner with them and work with them. I mean, this is not an obvious situation to have a group of undergraduate situations working, or undergraduate students, I should say, working with them. And this is an example of them trying to find new ways of helping their sporting organization themselves. So it's a great example of how organizations adapt essentially to survive. If you're familiar with the Moneyball quote from the room there, adapt or die. Again, I promise I won't quote Moneyball, though I could, I won't do it. But I picture that in your mind, the need to adapt or die in the sporting context. The last thing we're going to be talking about today is organizational composition. Another thing you look for when you're at a nonprofit, again, an organization that serves, we're going to be focusing on Canada in this course, but an organization that serves the sport delivery systems of Canadians. How do you embed diversity at a structural level, right? In your organization, how well do you represent the country that you are aiming to serve? Empirical research in sport mainly supports the theoretical perspective, suggesting a positive relationship between gender diversity in sport leadership and organizational outcomes. This is from Wicker, 2020. Within sport, diversity was found to benefit decision-making through learning from others, role modeling, and a generation of ideas. Empirical research in sport mainly supports this perspective, and the idea here is that this generates positive outcomes. This isn't essentially something that was done just because it is the right thing to do, though it is. But again, there's real tangible gains that can be had from demonstrating diversity within your nonprofit organization. Now, if you already had me at 1B93, we talked about this in terms of a value generation exercise. If you look at a nonprofit that is supposed to deliver sport to Canada and you have a very uniform board, if it's all men, if it's all women, if it's all young men aged 15 to 30, if it's all old women aged 60 to 75, right? And this organization, this board, aims to serve all Canadians, for instance. You can see how, again, it will limit, and again, and this is not, as we talked about in 1P93, if you did take that course, this is not to reduce everyone to essentially who they are as, and who they represent themselves as and who they identify as. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose is, it is extremely important to get a diversity of experience, a diversity of points of view. Certainly there are visible and there are explicit and implicit forms of diversity that we want to employ here when we're evaluating organizations, but you just don't want to have large groups of the same types of people making decisions that serve your organization. There's a many, many, many different reasons for this, and we'll get into that throughout the semester. But again, if you claim to be delivering support for all of Canada, there needs to be an understanding that you can't have the people running your organization all look one specific way, all have the same type of experience, all have the same even working background. These types of things are all important. And again, the research that I put out here as a part of your reading, I help you understand what the possible benefits are of doing that. So again, this is all a part of our exercise in trying to give you better tools to evaluate nonprofit organizations as you evaluate them, as you come across them, as you see support being delivered by them. This is important when you're trying to decide whether or not we can figure out why a nonprofit is good, bad, indifferent, stale, dynamic, you name it. So this is the sort of theoretical underpinning. Certainly when you're evaluating a nonprofit or when you're looking at the nonprofit that you're going to be working with, you can have these as a part of your tool belt. And we will finish off today by giving you your form response question as a part of the audio lecture. So again, if you have been listening to this so far, make sure you've been taking some notes. Make sure you're noting some things down that you found interesting. And you'll be able then to more quickly reference them when you're making your form response. And you are able to sort of say, this is specifically what I'm looking for. Also, it'll help you with your audio response, which will be posted on Wednesday. So for your form response question this week, what I'm going to be looking for you to do is take the lesson that we've just had, the audio lecture that you've just listened to, and also have a look at the reading material on the slides. And I want you to evaluate a nonprofit, an NSO, one of the organizations responsible for delivering support in Canada. And I want you to evaluate an organization based on one of those three behaviors that we looked at today, be that proficient, be that proactive, or be that adaptive. So what I want you to do is say, hey, I'm going to do Baseball Canada, and here's the way that I think that they've been proficient in the past little while. How are you going to find that? That's a great question, right? So first of all, you need to make sure that you have an understanding of what those behaviors are. Have a look at the organization. Have a look at their website. Have a look at what they've been up to the last little while. Have they been demonstrating these types of behaviors? Perhaps you want to focus on an organization that you know has run into a little bit of trouble. Maybe you want to look at Canada Soccer, Hockey Canada, what have you. And you can say, how well have they been proficient, right? How well have they been proactive? How well have they been adaptive? I want you to have a look at an organization of your choosing and evaluate them on one of those three behavior types. And again, you can choose which one as well. And again, in terms of how will I know, how will I find out, I want you to use your investigative skills. Have a look at their website, certainly. Have a look at, certainly, if they've been in the news, if you're dealing Canada Soccer or Hockey Canada, for instance, that shouldn't be too difficult. Or Gymnastics Canada is another great example. Alpine Canada being another one. And you can have a look at sort of one of those three aspects and hold them to those standards. But I want you to be sure that during the course of your form response that you directly cite the reading materials in terms of what the proficient or adaptive or proactive behaviors are, and sort of give this kind of a brief, again, it's only looking for 350 to 500 words here, but it's a brief report on what went wrong or what the sort of issues or how an organization has succeeded in those three ways. So that's your form response question for the week. And again, have a look at the reading materials posted along here that you can use in your form response, and make sure that you're writing down little times throughout the audio lecture to make your life easier and my life easier if you're going to mention something specifically from the lectures. So again, I'll be back real soon here to fill you in with more information on the nonprofits themselves, and have a look out for some guest lectures that are going to be posted very soon as well. And if you've got any questions, feel free to email me and drop in during office hours. The link is on Brightspace for my office hours on Tuesday. All right, have a wonderful week.